let our children upstairs? Okay. So you're the host, and your wife is the hostess, but you have to come and sit and listen. I know you want to run around and take care of everybody, but you got to sit down. Because this is a
housewarming function. They're coming to your home. Although you've been living here just a short while, the commencement of the use of the home for Krishna service.
Home can be, depending upon the consciousness behind the purchase and the use of a home, it can be Krishna conscious or it can be binding. So let's look at both. In Isopanishad, Isopanishad, there's an explanation of how to see that which we have as necessities as being supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that He is the proprietor, and we're the tenant. So when somebody's renting an apartment, they're the tenant. And somebody else is the owner, and somebody's the manager. So they may not be so careful because they don't own it. But if they own it, there's the same possession or proprietorship turns sawdust into gold. You heard that expression before?
Yes.
That's like, you know, the entrepreneurial idea of owning something, so I use it very carefully, and if I don't own it, then... So the brahmacharis who are living in the ashram, they have that test also, like, you know, like say the mridanga. Who does it belong to? It doesn't belong to anybody. And so I'll use it and leave it and don't care about it because it doesn't belong to anybody. It doesn't belong to me. So, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't belong to anybody. But then the brahmachari needs to learn, no, it does belong to somebody. It belongs to Krishna. And because it belongs to Krishna, I should use it very carefully. And the grahastha has to learn the same lesson in a different way. First I'm renting, and then I own a home. Now if I think it belongs to me, then it's a stumbling block on the path of spiritual realization to think, aham ameti, I am this body, and the things in relation to this body are mine, like the fruits of my work. I just learned something today, I'll share it with you. Prabhupada's translation of karma, you're all familiar, is fruitive work. But look up fruitive in the dictionary, you're not going to find it. But in old English dictionaries you find it. Fruitive. And it is derived from the same sense of fruit. Attached to the fruits of one's work is fruitive work. Thinking, fruitive work is rooted in thinking of the self in terms of the body. If my identity time out for child control. If I think of the self in terms of the body, then what's the sense of what belongs to me? What belongs to me is what's generated from this body. For me, it's mine. So like my children, my wife or husband, my family, and from my work, there's my income, so my bank balance, my car, my home, my clothes, my shoes, mine, is a conception of fruitive work. And as long as one holds on to the conception of, material conception, of I and mine, there's no freedom, it's bondage. One may think there's freedom. Prabhupada gives the example of the cow on the rope. And the rope has a stake. In the end, the stake goes in the ground and the cow is eating the grass in a certain circumference, thinking I'm free. But there isn't freedom. There's freedom to move in that much dimension. But there's a proprietor or a caretaker of the cow. As long as the conception of life is rooted to I am this body, this is, you know, Krishna Consciousness 101, Bhagavad Gita 101, but it's something that when you buy a house, you have to think about, because if we're thinking in terms of my family, my bank balance, now my home, then it's binding. It doesn't free us from the bodily conception and the bondage of fruitive work. So the path of Krishna consciousness is to recognize the proprietorship is in the hands of the personality of Godhead. Isa vasya midam sarvam jat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyak tena bhunditaha Magridaha kasya svidhanam. He who has generated everything is the proprietor. The theme of the whole of Sri Ishopanishad is proprietorship, Prabhupada explains. Who owns everything? God owns everything, and we just bought a house. So who owns the house? God owns the house, or we own the house. Look on the deed, it has my name. I own the house. Contested in court, I own the house. At the time of death, who owns the house? We look beyond our man-made laws and our man-made conceptions of proprietorship, and we have a spiritual conception. It belongs to God. He's allowed me, I'm putting my title on it, just like my children, my car, my mortgage payment, my insurance payment. I have obligations, but ultimately the proprietor, the consciousness of devotion is Krishna, is the proprietor, and we're dedicating everything, including all those things that we consider to be in the category of mine, to be the property of God. But we won't be able to do that if we don't understand the self is other than this body, but the self is really, the real identity of the self is spirit soul. Therefore, Krishna's instruction begins in Bhagavad Gita on, my dear Arjuna, you want to know what is the duty of life. Before we talk about duty of life, let's talk about who you are. And your spirit soul. You're not matter. The soul is Najayate Mriyate Va Kadachin. I am Bhupa Bhavita Va Nabuyaha. The soul isn't born, never comes into being, souls are never created at any point in time, nor are they ever destroyed at any point in time. The soul can't be cut by weapons, withered by the wind, moistened by water. Not material. That's what we are. We're a non-material being. Now, we can talk about duty. Now that we understand, at least theoretically, we're spirit-soul, how do we work in this world? We work in this world in the mood of sacrifice, yajna, unto Vishnu, yajna vai Vishnu. That's the message of the Vedas, sacrifice unto Vishnu. So our work is unto Krishna. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, tadasi, yat. Yat tapasyasi kaunteya, mat kurasha madarpanam. You offer everything to Krishna. Whatever work we do, whatever sacrifices, we're always sacrificing. Whatever charities, whatever austerities. I'm just commenting how interesting Chicago is. This morning was winter, in the afternoon it was summer, and now it's spring. And all in one day. It was so cold this morning. Thinking, they have the peacock fan, poor deities. Everybody's in a sweater and they're trying to get a peacock fan. It's winter, we don't need a peacock fan. Anyway. So, we're not the controllers. We're subject to so many conditions of life. As long as we think of ourselves as the controllers, i.e. the proprietors and therefore the controllers and enjoyers, we're setting ourselves up for suffering. Guaranteed suffering. Dehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. These are Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. When we're thinking samsparshaja bhoga, when the senses contact those yummy sense objects in the mood of enjoyment, dukkha yonaya evate. Yoni means place of birth, like a womb. There's a yoni. So the birthplace of dukkha is that. Anticipating happiness when the senses come in contact with the object. And homes are a nice object in come in contact with. It's my home. And I am entitled to enjoy it because it's mine. Proprietorship. So this is a little lesson in trying to understand how to dedicate the home. So far it's entering into a new home in a mood of devotion to Krishna is to like hit the delete button or erase the whole idea of it is mine and in its place put the dedication that this should be for a service to the Supreme. And the service to the Supreme includes taking care of our children, to raise them so that they can return after this life to the spiritual world. And gee, if I'm supposed to do that, I have to qualify myself spiritually to guide my children to do that and take the assistance of those who are experienced devotees so I can get that training and they can also provide my children that training and use my abilities, use my working energy, use my intelligence, use my wealth, use my speech, use with all those nice gifts that have been given to me, including this house, in service to God. And Kuroshi Yadas Nasi Yajahosi Padasi Yad. There's another very nice instruction that just expands that idea from Bhagavad Gita in Srimad Bhagavatam, where Vyasadeva is dispelling the idea that the purpose of religious life is improving one's material condition. Now, many people, when they buy a new house, when they have a house warming function, it doesn't happen like this. You sit down and chant God's name and speak about how you don't really own the house. Well, they'll have a party and they'll break out the, you know, the beverages and the food and the, you know, music and yahoo, party time, because we just got a new house. Celebrate. So a religious idea is to offer our thanks to God and dedicate ourselves to service to God. But sometimes a religious idea is merely to say, thank you, now I'm entitled, now it's sanctified enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Because I did my punya, and now I'm entitled to enjoy. But the Bhagavatam teaches, no. Dharmasya hi apabhagasya narto tayopakalpate. Bhagavatam teaches us that never should your idea be that dharma is for the purpose of arranging for prosperity for sense gratification purpose. Rather, dharma should be thought of as a means of achieving ultimate liberation. Not just later on, but even presently, qualifying myself for that ultimate liberation through devotion to the Supreme now. And, kind of like a checkmate, is supposing one performs one's duties of life in a religious way, and some opportunity, prosperity, some facility comes your way. Some abundant prosperity comes your way, supposing that happens, simply because you've been religious. The Bhagavatam teaches, Natasya dhamai kamtasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha, that never should that prosperity be used for sense gratification, but again, that prosperity should be dedicated to the service of the Supreme. Before and after. And if you don't have it in place before, it's not going to happen after. So, in a religious way, in a God-conscious way, take up dedication of this house unto the service of Krishna. Mat kurasho, tat kurasho mat arpanam. That activity should be like a expression of worship or devotion to the Supreme. Let us dedicate this home to Krishna's service. And all the other things in the category of mind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Sharanagati, very nice songs that through song it teaches the way of surrender to Krishna. He says, now that I've come to my senses and understood so much of my life has been wasted. He's writing as if he's a gross materialist and an elderly gross materialist who's looking back upon his life and sees, I've so much wasted all my time and energy, and now I'm so old, I hardly have one life left in me and energy and ability, and I have all these memories and attachments and longings, and so much time I've wasted. And I have no attachment for the Supreme. I don't even know who I am. I've missed the goal of life. Life has passed through my fingers like sand. What do I have left? Nothing. How unfortunate. So now with whatever vitality I have left, manasa deha geya yo kichumo, the praise to the Supreme Lord. Manasa, my mind, deha, this body, geha, my home, and all of the things in the category of mine. My body, my mind, my home, my everything. I place at your feet, it's now yours. And my cares and the worries, they're also at your feet. I'm your servant. And now I'm doing everything on your account. So that's the idea, the transcendental idea of surrendering unto Krishna. Still the title on the property says it's yours, but the consciousness that we must have behind that is, it's actually Krishna's. I'm the caretaker, so I put my name on it, but it belongs to Krishna. And I'm dedicating it to his service. And I know that Krishna will protect me. On that basis of that faith in Krishna's protection, this is one of the components of surrender. One has, there's six angas of surrender according to Padma Purana, and one of them is Krishna will protect me. Another is Krishna will maintain me. Another is Krishna is my dearmost friend. I accept those things that are favorable for devotional service. I reject those things that are impediments for devotional service, and I offer myself fully unto him. These are principles of surrender. And when one is in that mood of surrender to Krishna, you feel the relationship with Krishna protecting you. It's Krishna who's maintaining us. The fruitive worker is thinking, I'm maintaining, and I worship Krishna. But the devotee is understanding, I'm serving Krishna, and Krishna is maintaining me. The activity looks the same, but the consciousness is altogether different. The message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is constitutionally we're servants of Krishna, and through the medium of surrender and offering all things to Krishna, we can realize the spiritual reality and that way become freed from the bewilderments, the unnecessary entanglements and illusions of material life. That's the path of back home, back to Godhead. Path of transcendence. So, I'm happy that you invited us to come to join with you in kirtan and remembering Krishna and dedicating a nice house with nice Vaishnavas to come and appreciate it. This is a very nice way to do things. Hare Krishna. Any points somebody would like to make or comments? We'll have kirtan some more. Yes. There's layers of bondage. One is that the most painful bondage is bondage to forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. The more obvious one, which is also subtle, is bondage to the reaction of our fruitive work. With fruitive work or karma, karma has these two meanings. What you do, but karma also means the reaction of what you do. The bondage that comes back upon you, regardless of circumstance, just simply due to that identification with I'm the proprietor of the fruits of my work, because I'm the proprietor, I'm entitled to enjoy it, and then involving oneself with the business of enjoying the fruits of one's work. There's reaction for that. the laws of nature bind one to the reactions, good, bad, and mixed. But the other bondage is the bondage of the whole existence of forgetfulness of Krishna and our relationship with Him. It binds fruitive work, binds the performer to that ignorance, that forgetfulness. Even for a good person who acknowledges the existence of God, it's not sufficient to acknowledge the existence of God. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. Or put it in a broader term, surveys are done. How many people believe in God and believe in the soul and believe in the afterlife? And it's a huge percentage of people. 85-90% of Americans surveyed believe in the soul and the existence of God. They don't live their life that way. They live their life as fruitive workers. So over there on the side is acknowledgement of the existence of God, theoretically somehow. And thus enjoy. And thus bound by the fruits of their work. And the work not necessarily being theistic work, or work according to the codes of their own scripture. The fruit of work binds us to that forgetfulness of God. The forgetfulness of our real identity as spirit soul, even we acknowledge it. What that means. We read a verse this morning in a really heavy chapter in the third canto of Bhagavatam entitled Calculation of Time by the Atom. It's like super technical. But one of the messages in that chapter, the verse that we read this morning, Prabhupada is explaining that time is actually eternal. And you go away from eternal time, like the breathing of Mahavishnu. And within one nimesha, or one fraction of a second of that breathing, because it's eternal time, it's a lila, to his exhaling and his inhaling, so many Brahmas are appearing and then are dissolved within the breathing period of Mahavishnu. And then a dormant bodies, then his exhaling. So then you go down and there's Lord Brahma and the divisions of Brahma's day. And there's so many kalpas, so many yuga cycles, the Brahma kalpa, Padma kalpa, Varaha kalpa, this kalpa, that kalpa, just within a day of Brahma. Then go further divisions, the realms of the demigods, and go further divisions, the realms of the human beings, the realm, just go further and further down to the movement of the atom. But all of that taken all together, what the verse was saying is that Maitreya is explaining to Vidura that on the platform of the Supreme, time is eternal, and time controls all events of matter, and yet the Supreme Lord controls time. And those who are conscious of the Supreme Lord, they're not controlled by time. They're not affected by time. Because matter will come and go, the body will take birth and grow old and die. That goes on. But if the consciousness of the soul, like occupying a new house and that activity, if the consciousness goes to the Supreme, then we're not affected by time and the controlling influences of time. Conversely, the bondage of fruitive work is we think it's mine. And then we're controlled by time. And then we become so unhappy when death comes. or old age comes, or miseries come, or some problem comes. Because we're attached to our fruit of work, instead of attached to the Supreme, who is timeless, or the controller of time that controls all things. Liberation isn't escapism. Liberation is just accepting reality, or learning to be conscious on the platform of reality. And conscious on the platform of the soul, conscious on the platform of the soul's relation with the Supreme, and then fulfilling our duties of life in that consciousness, acting as if what's temporal is real, but acknowledging it's just temporal. It's a duty, it's an opportunity to serve Krishna in different ways. It's necessary to leave fruitive work behind us, and to do that we have to leave the bodily conception behind us and accept the spiritual conception of who we are and what our duties are. Anything else?
One of the sentences you mentioned during the lecture was that a devotee, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is praying that my worries are yours, my anxieties are yours, I'm your servant. So at what stage can a devotee, you know, feel or pray like that? It seems that at every stage you pray like
at
that.
At the point of surrender. Which should be all the time. But it's not like irresponsible bumping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's divesting oneself of the illusion that it is mine and I'm meant to create the solution to the problem. Rather, I'm the servant and here's an opportunity to serve you. You can't tell the IRS, and you know, it's, I surrendered to Krishna, so it's his bill. We act responsibly, but it's without the sense of proprietorship. I'm a servant. You pay the mortgage on the house, but our consciousness is, it's Krishna's mortgage. It's Krishna's ability that's given me the ability to work. It's Krishna's kindness that I have this facility to do work. It's Krishna's paycheck and it's Krishna's mortgage payment. And I got my name on the title. I'm looking after it for Krishna. My concern for my children's education and their development of character. I don't abandon that concern, but it's in service to Krishna. But if there's some anxiety, but I place that anxiety at Krishna's feet, and I serve him in a responsible way, and so on. So at what point, your question was, at every moment. It's the expression of surrender. We're not lazy, complacent, and irresponsible. Because it's on Krishna's account, it's even more attentive, because it's for Krishna. Be more resourceful, and more responsible, and more careful. That is for Krishna.
So where I was going with that is, so I don't want to be presumptuous to think that I'm a servant, but a thousand times removed, but I'm still a servant. And because I'm seeing that if I don't have that, then the default position is to think that I'm the controller. So it's better to err on that side, it seems to me at least. I mean, but of course, be careful that I'm just an insignificant servant, or I'm a servant.
Yeah.
humble mood, but the humble servant isn't thinking, I'm there. The humble servant is thinking, I'm trying. And in my trying, this is my responsibility, to serve. And to think of what lies before me as service, not mine. Yes.
Well, we're talking about fruiting activity.
Yeah.
You should not be attached to that. So how do we, what is our consciousness of non-fruiting activity? Fruiting activity, we have
to consciousness is devotion.
Then why we have to take 2 hours? Can we give to Krishna, let him take the non-fruiting activity?
That's the idea. The whole idea is to not take for ourselves. But you may still have a car and have a bank account. And from the bank account you're making your car payments and insurance payments. But the consciousness is, this is Krishna's. I'm placing it, an account that has my name on it is Krishna's account. I'm spending it very carefully because it's Krishna's. That's my consciousness.
Even suffering.
That's the other part.
Yeah, opposite of
that's also service. I'm paying for my past stupidity. My mistakes. I accept responsibility for my choices, past and present. The prayer is from Lord Brahma. When Brahma, after he steals the calves and cowherd boys, and he comes back and that whole, and he sees Krishna displays in such a way that he realizes Krishna has manifested himself as all the calves and cowherd boys. Such mystic power that Krishna has. And then he withdrew them all. And they amalgamated themselves again into his form. So he made a big offense against Krishna. And so he recognizes, I'm due a big reaction for this big offense to Krishna. And his prayer is, I accept the reaction. Whatever's coming, whatever is deserving, that's coming to me. So we can pray like this. Due to my past activities, whatever is coming to me, I accept. Put that mixed, I accept. My consciousness is not to make the mix different. My consciousness is to accept, but to dedicate myself unflinchingly unto the service of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing that by so doing, I thereby inherit the property of my father. And who is Brahma's father? Lord Vishnu. What's the property of Brahma's father, Lord Vishnu? The kingdom of God. You'll enter into the kingdom of God just by this one thing. My mind will not budge one inch from that position of dedication unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So whether it's taking care of our duties, or it's, uh-oh, here comes a reaction from my past misdeeds, it's service, or service, or service, unto the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. Knowing that the Lord's protection is there, and His shelter and His lotus feet are there, and that's my, by just doing that one thing, I'll inherit my entrance into the kingdom of God. And the very language is used, Svadhyaya Bhag, the inheritance of the son goes
of the father goes to the son. Son just has to be survive the father, and he inherits the property of the father by law. So what's our real business? Is our real business to accumulate stuff, on the one hand, fruitive, and the other hand, you know, address ourselves to the problems that come from fruitive work and the unavoidable mistakes that come from fruitive work and the entanglements that come from fruitive work, and just kind of, you know, expertly manage the problems, and that's a successful life. That's material conception entirely. The spiritual conception is, I accept the responsibility of service in that field, and my mind does not budge one inch from the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. That's Brahma's prayer. And it's appropriate for our circumstances of life also. Something?
Yes, Maharaj. It seems like it takes a lot of conscious investment.
A lot of
consciousness investment.
Investment of consciousness, yeah.
Because maybe initially when we're going to doing a particular activity, I'm a servant, but after you get situated in that particular activity, it becomes routine, and it's like the consciousness goes also after you become situated.
Yeah.
So how do you maintain that investment of consciousness in the particular activity as you get more situated in doing that activity?
Okay, a how-to question. One has to have a spiritual conception as opposed to the complacent mental conception. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what inspires people, chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritan arjuna. The four types of pious people who surrender unto me, and the motivation, the fuel in the tank, you know, which is propelling us to go to Krishna, is some material purpose. And when the material purpose is served, the tank's empty. Our motivations are not the same. So how to sustain? You have to clearly identify a spiritual purpose and take shelter and cultivate the spiritual purpose. And continue to cultivate the spirit, like rededicate ourselves again and again to that spiritual purpose in a spiritual conception. We have to come to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, we're just, you know, on the sine curve of the material platform. When it hurts, we surrender. And when the hurt is relieved, we slacken. It's from the platform of the mind, rather than from the platform of the soul. And from the platform of the soul, that's the platform of surrender, with a spiritual conception. That's one thing. But to consciously adopt another purpose with a clear picture of the spiritual conception of what that is. What does it mean to be a servant of Krishna, surrender to Krishna in service, you know, engaged in devotional service instead of fruitive work, rather than the words or the mind, you know, from the heart. Another is, you know, your question is, how do we sustain that? It's, you know, by strong sadhana. Continue to cleanse and invigorate the heart, the seat of consciousness, the soul. We get strength from properly performed sadhana and apply that strength, the investment of consciousness, in reaching the goal. And a third is good association. We can't, you know, just depend upon good association. They're going to pick us up and carry us to the goal. We have to make our own personal efforts of application in sadhana and having a clear spiritual conception. For lazy people, spiritual life doesn't work. Religious life can work. Because you go to the place of worship one day of the week. Maybe in your home, you know, sometime in the morning there's some prayers or some puja or whatever the religious practice is according to that. And then the rest of your life is enjoyment. So this is just to help the enjoyment. Just do it religiously. It's still a material conception of what life is and who I am and who God is and my relationship with God. God is an order supplier for the things that make me happy. And I do something and he gives me something. It's a nice business arrangement. I mean, he's putting it in gross terms, but essentially that's what it is. So to be on a spiritual path, you can't be complacent, can't be lazy. At least the thoughtfulness, the brahminical work needs to be done to stay on the path of devotion. Enthused. There has to be a real sense of tangible meaning and connecting with that tangible meaning and then being carried by sadhana, by good association, and being very clear what the goal is. Keep pursuing that. And feel the help, the protecting hand of Krishna assisting. And ultimately that's what keeps us going. It's wanting a loving relationship that's perfect. And that's with God. Because other things are imperfect. And we can connect with that experience of a loving relationship that's perfect, we can keep going. I want more. I want it more often, more completely, more. I want to give more to that loving relationship. Yeah.
I don't understand very clearly what is the difference between being spiritual and being religious.
Well, there's lots of different things out there in the world. What people think of the general thing, when people in general use that, it's trendy these days for people to say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And what they mean is, I don't follow any particular doctrine. They say it's stronger dogma or any rules or regulations of codes of religion. I don't do any of that. But I'm spiritual. What they mean really is they have some sense of goodness in them. Compassion, nonviolence, kindness, more of goodness. To worldly people, spiritual means something of the mode of goodness without relying upon the vehicle of religious teaching or religious disciplines to get them there. Well, I use that in a different way. Where religious is Dalamiva, could you just tilt that way a little bit? Thank you. Religious means codes of religion that promote the quality of goodness, and spiritual means that which brings one directly to the platform of the soul. That's spiritual. the spiritual is Brahma. The Brahma Bhuta Prasanat Nana Sochati Nakamsati Samab Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madhbhakti Mabhatena. The Brahma Bhuta platform is a spiritual platform.
Does it necessarily follow the
course? No. It can, but doesn't necessarily. The Vedic process allows for either, to say it that way. One can progressively follow codes of religion, be promoted more and more and more and more and more over lifetimes of elevation to the quality of goodness. Then become attracted to knowledge of Brahman, that which is Sat, eternal. Study of the Upanishads, study of that portion of the Vedic literature which teaches Jnana, knowledge of the Supreme, then what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Jamanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate. They surrender unto Krishna. Why? Vasudev Sarvamiti. They understand Krishna is everything. Maybe. May. Samahatma Sudurlabha. It's very rare to find such a person. Sudurlabha. Not only Durlabha. Very difficult. But there's that one precedes the other path. But there's the other path where one just recognizes I should surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna says, Sarvadharmam Pradyaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. Just eye contact. So that's the Bhagavat Dharma path. And when surrender to Krishna is taken sincerely, then those qualities of goodness are decorations that Krishna provides to his devotee. The one who is sincere on the path of devotion. Now supposing someone doesn't have faith in Krishna. There are people that don't have faith in Krishna in this world. So this other is there. They can follow codes of religion to gradually become more situated in goodness. Become more interested in transcendence. And eventually come to the position of understanding Vasudeva is everything. Krishna Kirtan. Sit down. Thank you. Or, now once again, the direct. Just, like Prabhupada gives the example, the elevator method and the staircase method. The elevator method is, you're at the bottom floor of the Empire State Building. This is Prabhupada because he was in New York giving this example. Press the button. Whoop, you're at the top floor. The door opens. There you are. Top floor. That's the elevator method. The staircase method is, you know, 121 floors. You climb up and you're out of breath by the time you get there. You don't have a heart attack. But there's the gradual method. That's Vedic. And there's the qualifications come to you method. Krishna Kirtan. Calm down. Thank you. Okay?
Is this person heard? Is a complete understanding or a complete knowledge of the end required while you are in that process of progressing?
I would say a little differently that just like I'm articulating, we need to know what the goal is. But as you progress, clarity of what the goal is becomes more in focus. From a distance, the goal looks different. When consciousness becomes cleansed, the goal is more clear and in focus. You know, that Krishna is a person who exchanges loving dealings with each and every one of us. Although we're very tiny, he's very loving and accepts us in our loving service. And it's very personal. That's true now, even recovered. And the realization of that becomes stronger as we progress. So, therefore, the scriptures and our great acharyas, they explain that from the very beginning, for the unqualified souls, it's very, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, what does that mean? So, it means a lot of things. And then, through the course of disclosure in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam, it just becomes more clear, more clear, more clear, more clear. And as it becomes more clear, our impetus, like this question Jai Jagannath was asking, how do we stay on the path of surrender, and rather than becoming complacent and just take it easy after some time? If we're hearing properly, we get the impetus because Krishna is so wonderful, Krishna is so loving, and Krishna is so inconceivably great. I love to serve him. Impetus comes in that way. And as that mood of surrender becomes stronger, then reciprocation is commensurate with our, and proportionate to our mood of surrender. The love with which we offer something to Krishna is the love with which we will experience from Krishna. It's reciprocation. And it's dependent upon how much we extend ourselves to Krishna in a loving way. Our future is in our hands. Our clarity of the goal is in our hands. Because Krishna is all loving. But he doesn't, so it's really, it's like mystical. He doesn't interfere with our independence, although he's reminding us constantly. A rebellious spirit is not going to get us in a good situation. Anything else? Let's have some more. Good, Tom, is that all right?